Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is episode 111.
Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode. It is because of you that we do this. And as much as I enjoy hanging out and getting to talk about all kinds of things related to fitness over here, it's
in our closet with me.
Or maybe Athena will be joining us in our closet one day. You never know. It is, again, you're the reason why we record this episode, these episodes. But hey, speaking about fitness, we are getting deeper into the planning stages of what will be a back-to-back year of doing our thing with the Vegan Strong Plant Built team. We had a gap in running this thing where we go to a sports festival and we compete together as a team for several years, and then we came back when Mr. America had a resurgence, and it's year two. Year two, we'll be entering another sport, possibly even two more sports. I'm thinking about strongman. You'll see. If at the time that you're listening to this, there's a strongman team, then there is. I'm not sure yet. We don't know for certain while we're recording this one, but the bottom line is we're going to bring more athletes this year. We're bringing more athletes to Miss America. That is 100% for sure.
That's awesome. I'm very excited about that. Excited to head back down to Atlantic City and mostly eat some Tony Bologna's pizza, but also, I guess, see the team kick some ass. So,
yeah, I had a lot of internal motivation because I was one of the athletes competing. And I said to myself this year that I'd be just as motivated. And like in some ways, it's going to be a little bit of a different feeling and a little bit of a different landscape for me. Being one of the persons behind that are pulling the strings, making sure that this happens. But I think it's also going to be rewarding in a whole different way. Seeing this team just do its thing and meddle and crush it. And see what we're doing grow and reach more and more people.
Totally. I just remembered something else I wanted to mention before we get into our topic. Just a little PSA for people. As of recording this, last week I had a stomach problem. I got sick to my stomach very badly. And at first I thought it was some kind of stomach flu or whatever. Anyway, I realized over the 48 hours that I was violently ill that I gave myself food poisoning, eating Beyond Meat jerky. Did you guys know that that stuff is supposed to be refrigerated after it's opened? The jerky is supposed to be refrigerated after it's opened. And if you don't refrigerate it, you have 3 days to eat it.
Is it something specific about the Beyond beef jerky or is it all beef jerky?
No, this is just the Beyond. It was the only thing that I ate that was different. I told you guys, I eat the same thing every, I'm on a cut. I'm eating the same thing every day. And the only thing that I had eaten differently was this Beyond jerky that was in our cabinet for, I don't know, probably a month, honestly. And it had been opened. So am I an idiot for not checking the label? Absolutely. But it smelled fine. It tasted fine. Whatever. 2 days into me being sick as a dog, I look up Beyond Meat jerky and like how long it lasts. And it says, once it's opened, it needs to be put in the refrigerator. And then if you put it in the fridge, it has 3 days, you have 7 days to eat it. But if you don't put it in the fridge, you have 3 days to eat it. Now, I thought jerky was one of those things that you like take on a hiking trip that you like can have for, you know, a week easily. And anyway, you cannot be very freaking careful because that sickness was intense. It double dragon situation happened. We had a fever of 102. It was not good. I'm glad that it wasn't something that's like contagious though, because oh my God, if that ripped through this household right before I leave for Vegas for my birthday, I would have been so sad. Anyway, I'm back from it now, but I still feel like pretty weak. It was rough. It was rough. So this has been a PSA. You're welcome. What are we talking about today, Giacomo?
Besides not double dragoning?
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about something that has nothing to do with that, but
oh, I don't know. My core was working. My core was definitely doing some work.
Exactly. Maybe there are some parallels here. We're talking about core strength. Like, what is core strength, essentially?
core strength, core training, what people get wrong about training their core. So first of all, let's talk. This is a really interesting. I thought this was going to be a very simple topic. And the more I researched it, the more I was like, actually, this is like kind of confusing. And I can understand why people are so confused. Core strength is very hard to define. In fact, what is your core itself is not even agreed upon in all of the literature. Did you know that?
No.
So some doctors and medical professionals believe there are three core muscles: your rectus abdominis, which is your six-pack muscle, your obliques, the muscles on the side, and your transverse abdominis. And some medical professionals and industries believe there are up to 29 pairs of muscles that help stabilize the spine, hip, and pelvis. So even just thinking about what is the core, there is not like one definition. So that in and of itself, it's like, ugh, well, if we don't even know what the core is, like exactly, how do we define what is or is not core strength?
The thing in the middle of your body that makes you stand upright. Like, we don't need to, let's dumb this down for a second instead of thinking about 50 different muscles that all interconnect in the middle of the torso. That's how I feel at the moment.
So I'm not going to give you guys a list of what I would consider to be core muscles, but I mean, I couldn't even if I wanted to. I don't even know every single one of these muscles. But I would argue that the core is more than just the rectus abdominis, transverse abdominis, and obliques. I think that it would be really any muscle that does help stabilize the spine, the hips, and the pelvis, right?
Sure.
To me, that makes sense. Those are all core muscles, which means like your glutes in some ways are a core muscle. Your hip flexors in some ways are a core muscle, not just your abs. So I think for the average person, when they think about core training, they are thinking about training their abs specifically. Crunches, leg lifts, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm still following, I think.
So the other thing is, what does the core actually do? The core does two things. One, it moves the spine. So it does two opposing things, right? One is that it moves the spine, right? If you do a crunch, everybody can picture a crunch, your spine flexes. Flexing the rectus abdominis makes the spine flex. Muscles move bones. Remember that. But the other thing that the core does is it stabilizes the spine. So it stops the spine from moving. So that in and of itself is a juxtaposition, right? Your core both moves the spine and stabilizes it, often at the same time.
Well, it's making it so that you're protecting your spine. So your spine doesn't just start flailing around while you're doing stuff in a way where it's actually going to absorb the impact when your core should be absorbing the impact of the exercise because it's sturdy.
Yeah. If you didn't have these muscles stabilizing your spine, your spine is just like a bunch of little rings of bone with tiny little jelly things in between them. It would just collapse like a, I don't know, like a party favor or something, like the streamers on the ceiling. Like it would just collapse. So the core is very, very important because it literally supports everything you do. Your core is working all the time. You're walking, your core is working. You're picking up your kid, your core is working. You're doing a squat at the gym, it's working. You sneeze, it's working.
Let me interject here. It's working, but you could be doing a better job making sure that it works in everything that you do.
Yes, 100%. But it is like, it's one of those muscles. It does, I mean, I guess all of your muscles are kind of working frequently, but I mean, it doesn't really rest. It doesn't get much rest. So, but when we think about training core, most people just think about very sort of basic ab movements and nothing else. And I think what they're actually thinking of is just training, usually just the rectus abdominis, sometimes the obliques, right? And they think that if you can see abs, then you must have a strong core. And I know last week or 2 weeks ago, I put out a video on the YouTube channel about how you should stop training the heck out of your abs, because from a physique perspective, one of the things, problems that I see is really overdeveloped abdominals, rectus abdominis and obliques specifically. But you can have that. You can have overdeveloped abs and still have a weak core. How crazy is that?
Yeah. And you could have a developed core and weak looking abs in terms of like what people think abs are and think core is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So abs do not equal core strength. Core strength does not necessarily equal abs. I think that's an important distinction to make right off of the bat.
Yeah. I'm kind of trying to think of the ways that, well, for me, and my mind always goes here, so help me, it's just what I do. It's aesthetics, right? Like, do you run the risk of bellowing out your abdominal wall too much if you're constantly focused on keeping your inner core muscles tight and keeping your core braced when you train, right? And like, what does that do when you weaken your abdominal wall, your rectus abdominis, when you weaken it from being tight and pushed in, like you start pushing it out a lot, you know, to get stronger or to just lift safely.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. So like, we'll take the Valsalva maneuver, for example.
Explain what that is.
Exactly. For those of you who are unaware, you take a big belly breath into your diaphragm, essentially, and you get as much air sucked into the center, like right behind your abdominal wall, as is humanly possible. You hold your breath, right?
You bear down on it.
You bear down on it. And that, it's basically created that balloon-like effect in your core, pushed out against your abdominal wall, keeps your spine sturdy and safe and protects you. You can even wear a belt, because I mean, your abdominal, your rectus abdominis is only so strong, and you need something even stronger to brace against you. I mean, you're literally bearing down that much air. Like, this is one example of how you would train your core to be stronger and in essence weaken some of your core muscles, right? Think about it. I mean, if you're putting strain against your abdominal wall and you're not, and you're pushing it out, I mean, how does that affect, what's your opinion? How does that affect that muscle? Does it weaken it?
I don't think that it weakens the muscle necessarily, but I think that I noticed this myself. So way, way, way back in the day, I'm going to go on a side tangent here for a second. Way back in the day when I was a server and a bartender, we used to have to wear these goddamn like cat suits basically to work in. And you better believe I learned real early how to hold everything just so that I didn't look like I was letting everything all hang out in this cat suit. So I didn't realize it at the time, but I was training my transverse abdominis to be tight and hollowed in and not quite sucked in, not that where you're like really sucking air in, but holding it in so that I could work. And it was actually very good for my core strength. I just didn't realize it then. And it was like a really shamey way to have to do it. Do not recommend. But when I started lifting heavy and doing those bracing breaths, those Valsalva maneuvers, I found myself holding that transverse abdominis tight position in my regular day-to-day life less and less and less. So I don't think the muscle is weaker necessarily, but I do think you just don't engage it as much.
Mm.
Or that's what I found. So I think that probably the most important core muscle to train, and I'm going to continue to Valsalva maneuver in all of my heavy lifts forever, because it makes me feel the safest and the most stable. Now, should you be Valsalva maneuvering when you're doing a bicep curl? No. But if you have to, and there are people out there that have to, one, that weight is probably too heavy. Two, your core is weak.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to Valsalva maneuver your way through every single exercise you do, if you have to hold your breath to brace your body through every exercise you do, your core is weak.
There is this one analogy that someone mentioned to me a very long time ago, and it is how I learned to engage my transverse abdominis. And I never forgot it. I think two people had and another person confirmed, like, this is what it's like. So, you know, well, first of all, your transverse abdominis, for those of you who are not already familiar, we're not going to pretend like everyone knows what each core muscle is. It looks like a weight belt, and it's
deep
inside your core. You cannot see this.
Mm-hmm.
muscle, but your transverse does, it can tighten up and it can tighten everything up inside of there. And
like a weight belt or a corset.
Mm-hmm. And to Danny's point, you get lazy training that muscle if you're constantly bracing your body to lift safely, right? So it's like train that muscle too. And the way that it was described to me was, you know how like you have a doll like that speaks and you have like the little rip cord in the back?
Yeah.
And you pull it back and then you let go of it and it starts talking. So someone said, okay, now stand up tall. And they cued me, right, physically. And they said, now picture you have a belt that you can't see inside of your body wrapped around your spine. Now attach that belt, just like that doll, is a string. Now I'm going to grab my finger, pretend like there's a string, and I'm going to pull it back. And I want you to tighten that muscle. Just pretend like someone's pulling on it and making it tighter. And that analogy stuck with me decades later and helped me think, conceptualize how to actually engage that inner muscle.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I love learning different weightlifting cues because, like, I want to have an arsenal of cues to tell people, because you'll tell somebody a cue that to you is very obvious, like, oh, you do this and then they do this, but it doesn't click with them. So I like to have lots of weightlifting cues, because sometimes you just find one and it just clicks with that person and you're like, yes, we got it. So thank you for that. For me, so the transverse abdominis and the multifidus, this is a muscle that runs right up alongside your spine, not your erectors, not those big cobra looking things that run down your back. It's tiny and it goes up along your spine. These are the two muscles that, in my opinion, are the most important for stabilizing the actual spine, transverse abdominis and multifidus. And they both fire just before you do anything else. They fire a split second before every other core muscle does. That's how important that they are. So to me, the transverse abdominis and the multifidus, which there's no way to measure multifidus strength. So what is core strength? It's very hard to actually measure. But the transverse abdominis, we can kind of measure. So I think that's the most important thing to train. When I think about core training, yes, you can do your crunches and your leg lifts and your oblique stuff a little bit here and there. But real core training is working on, how do I engage this transverse abdominis? How can I make it stronger and give it more endurance over time? Because also you need not just strength, but endurance here. This muscle is going to work all the time. When you start to get tired or fatigued and it gives out, boom, you just lost your spinal stability, right? So my favorite way to train the transverse abdominis actually looks like nothing at all. It's like you just said, like with the ripcord thing. For me, it's doing all different kinds of hollowing. So kind of like what I was doing when I was serving and bartending. I was just holding it in. You hear a lot of trainers say, like, pull your belly button into your spine, which I hate that cue because, again, cues, they all hit people differently. To me, pull your belly button into your spine just sounds like suck it in, which is not what it is. But something like draw your belly button backwards. Like, I don't know. There's different. I like your one about tightening it in. Anyway, the best way that I learned how to do this, or the easiest way that I learned how to do this, is actually to get on all fours. So knees under hips, hands under shoulders, keep a neutral spine, which means your ribs and your pelvis are not flared out or tucked in. They're just neutral. And it's in that position that you exhale all your air and simultaneously draw that belly button up backwards towards the ceiling. But you're not sucking in. You're blowing out and like pulling back, tightening that area. And then you hold it for as long as you can hold it. You can progress this into vacuums over time, but vacuums have a little bit of a sucking in quality. I don't think it's necessarily as important as just learning how to do this hollow. But there are so many variations of the hollow. The one I just described is the easiest one to start. Then you can start to do it standing or lying down or in all of these different positions. And you can start to do it walking around while you're doing things. Ideally, this should be firing when you're doing most exercises. Most. So,
little tiny tip, whenever you can keep your low back tight and pressed into, like, say, a flat bench or a decline bench or wherever it is that you're crunching, or a Swiss ball, like, that will also help you better be able to stabilize your inner core muscles. I think. I think if you're, and plus your low back is part of your core, right? I think that when you're
training your core, it's a good idea to keep your low back in contact with the mat or whatever you're on. I don't know about bench press though.
No. I mean,
you're doing abs on a bench.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Or core on a bench.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah. Keeping a neutral spine. You can't really, I'm trying to do it right now. You can't really engage the transverse abdominis in like an extended state, like with your butt stuck out back and your ribs flared up. It's really hard and uncomfortable to do. But a lot of people say, well, I just want abs. Why the hell should I give a crap about core strength? In my opinion, the number one reason to care about core strength is to avoid low back pain. If you start to deal with low back pain on a regular basis, it is going to become like death by a thousand cuts. It is going to slowly stop you from doing all kinds of things. You do not want to deal with chronic back pain if you can avoid it. And one of the best ways to avoid it is having a strong core. So we just talked mad about the transverse abdominis and the multifidus. I would argue that right behind that, most important thing you can train for a strong core is your glutes. Train your glutes. Listen, guys, I got a hard truth for you. Y'all have weak glutes, right? Like almost everybody has weak glutes. Anytime somebody goes to a physical therapist, they have a problem, they go to a physical therapist, they come back. I can bet money what they are going to say. They said, I have a weak core and weak glutes. Yep. You and everybody, like most people that haven't dedicated time to strengthening their core and their glutes are going to have weak core and weak glutes. Weak glute medius, like especially that's the side butt. Your side butt, when that is weak in conjunction with a weak core and tight hip flexors, that's up there too. Like you're going to have back pain. You're going to have back pain. So.
Yeah, I think that's very important to say because these days when we think about glutes, we just think about, oh, I want a bigger butt. Or I don't want a bigger butt, neglecting the fact that if you do not train the muscles in that area, you're going to risk having poor posture, back pain, and it's limiting with in all ways, both inside and outside of the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So now what do you do if somebody does want like a six pack? They want the abs and everything. This is a... It doesn't really have to do with core strength, but I know that it's kind of the thing people seek the most is a six pack.
Get leaner.
Get leaner, guys. That's the answer. You're going to be very hard pressed to train your abs into having abs.
Danny, you got to train your rectus abdominis somewhat. You got to train your six pack somewhat. We don't want people to completely ignore them.
Yeah.
We're just, it's the truth is like, likely you're already overtraining it, right? You're training it too often. So we're speaking to that narrative, if you will, but we don't want you to completely neglect your abs either. Like you can and should train your six pack abs, but if you've been training them actively for years now, like twice a week, for example.
Twice a week, man. I know people that train every day. They like set a timer and they go for 15 minutes or something almost every single day.
Give it a break. Give it a break for a little bit, even for like up to a year, and train other areas of your core.
And I'll write a program for them and it has, you know, one ab exercise twice a week. So there's two ab exercises, three sets. They're in an 8-12 rep range. And they're like, what? How am I gonna? And I'm like, well, you're gonna add weight to it, first of all, because we're gonna train. You want this muscle to grow? Why would I train it differently than I would train your biceps when I want them to grow?
Yeah. It's like when I write programming and you tell me you're like, put the calves in and put the abs in or the people will revolt. And I'm looking at you like, but this is a person who's always on their feet. So their abs, their calves are already crazy developed and their abs could probably use a bit of a break. Like, and we have, this is precious time. I want to make sure that you're doing something else. She's like, yeah, but like, that's what people want. Give the people what they want. You know, sometimes you got to give people what they need too, right? Those.
Well, we definitely give people what they need.
Exactly.
But a lot, I mean, even when I give people oftentimes like two ab exercises a week, like I said, in an 8 to 12 rep range, and we're going to progressively overload it, just like we're going to progressively overload anything else. Do you want this muscle to grow?
Mm-hmm.
Then we are going to treat it like everything else.
Exactly.
I wouldn't tell you to go lateral raise a pencil for 100 reps, right?
Hmm.
Because that is dumb. Why would I try to get your six-pack muscles to grow in the same way? Doing 100 crunches on the floor with no progression is not the way, you know? So, but yeah, I agree. You should train your rectus abdominis, your six-pack muscles a little bit. But what I see is people training just that, just their obliques, those two things over and over and over again. Then those muscles do, in fact, grow. And then they essentially have what looks like a belly. It is a belly of muscle, but it is still shaped like a belly because, guys, unless muscle is flexed, it's still soft, just like everything else. And then they're like, oh, I just have a belly. I just have to. And then they think I just have to train my abs because they're not good enough. And it's like, whoa, honey, you have trained your abs far too much. We need to train literally everything else. We need to give that a break and train everything else. And then it's going to look like you have this sleek little waist, you know? So it's a, ab training is interesting. It's the most interesting training of all of the body training, in my opinion, because people have such strong opinions about it. It's very, you know, there's some people who say you never need to train your abs if you're squatting, benching, and deadlifting. And I don't actually believe that to be true. Yes, your abs are working when you're squatting, benching, and deadlifting. So you are getting work done when you're doing that, but you're not, it's not like directly a scale. Your core is not specifically getting stronger. There's no specificity there. That's the word I'm looking
right.
for.
Right. And if you're doing squat, bench, and dead, you probably want to be stronger in those exercises. So why wouldn't you make sure that you also tap into your core strength and focus on it?
Right. When you have a stronger core, you're going to have a better squat, bench, and deadlift and everything else. Overhead press, rows, all of that's going to be better when your core is stronger, because with any lift, you're only as strong as the weakest link that you have. And, you know, you'll be chasing that weakest link around forever. Because you'll find the weakest link, you'll work on it, you'll bring it up. Guess what? Now you have a different weakest link. Now you're going to focus on that. And that's fine. That's the nature of the game. But if your weakest link is your core, you're not going to be able to progress past where your core gives out on any of these given lifts.
Do we assume that everyone already knows that you can't spot train lower abs and upper abs to the degree where you can train your 12 pack or 8 pack or 6 pack or 4 pack? Can we have that conversation?
I didn't even put that in my notes.
Mm.
Go ahead.
Well, the simple answer is your abs are going to look like what they're going to look like, and you can't do a damn thing about it. You can just make them look as nice as they can look. But your shape of your rectus abdominis is
the shape of your blocks.
The shape of your blocks. It's the shape of your blocks, and you can't. Yeah, it's just those are your genetics. Right? You can't change that. If you do want to see more lines, you get leaner. And obviously you can't ignore that muscle completely. It won't show. But training it super hard or like trying to focus on the bottom portion of your abs to make more lines come out,
Yeah.
Not a thing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And that is, I didn't even think about that yet, but a lot of people don't like when they finally get abs, they don't like the look of the abs. They don't like the shape of the abs. They don't have big block waist, like big blocks, or they have little blocks or something. Everybody's blocks are determined by the way the ligaments lay across your rectus abdominis. The rectus abdominis is basically one sheet of muscle that has ligaments running across it. You can't change where those are. You know, if you want to have more prominent, once you have abs, right? If you have too much body fat over your abs, there's nothing you're going to be able to do to see your abs. But once you actually have abs, if you realize you wish that they poked out more, then you can work on actually growing them. You need to actually grow the rectus abdominis and treat it just like you would treat any other muscle that you want to grow. If you think your rectus abdominis pokes out too much, you can give it a rest and stop training it so much, and it'll recede back behind that those ligaments. It's kind of like, you know, Play-Doh or something. It's just pushing out through this mesh cage, basically. But you can't change the shape of them.
Sorry.
And you can't focus on your upper or your lower abs. Everybody wants to, and you can't spot train for fat loss either, which feels like something I shouldn't have to say in 2023. But this is the thing. This is how so many people get caught in this trap. They think that if they train their abs, they're going to lose fat from their abs. And that's not how it works.
This is a very vain question that I'll just come right out with. I feel like depending on the elasticity of your skin, certain areas of your body, you can actually fill it out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't think this pertains to abs. Like you know what I mean?
Depends on the person, man. I mean, I'm happy to talk about skin elasticity all day. I had skin surgery to remove extra skin from so much weight loss. So but I've also seen and known people who lost a tremendous amount of weight whose skin bounced right back. Your skin elasticity, I feel like, is hugely genetic, mm-hmm. hugely. Some people just, you know, have crazy pregnancies where they have enormous bellies and then they have not even a stretch mark when it goes back. And then other people gain 10 pounds and they start getting stretch marks. It's all very, very genetic. So I don't want to say that wouldn't happen for somebody, because it might happen for somebody. It didn't happen for me. Yeah, I think you know pretty quickly if you're one of those people or not. But you can't build so much muscle in your low abs. Nobody could. Ronnie Coleman couldn't build so much muscle in his low abs that he filled out skin, like hanging skin from a lot of weight loss or mm-hmm. a previous pregnancy. That's not possible. Mm-hmm. If you have hanging skin at the bottom of your abs, there is no cream that's going to fix it. There is no level of massage that's going to fix it. I do not believe that there is a single laser on the planet that's going to fix it, regardless of what different spas will try to tell you. The only thing that's going to fix it is surgically removing it. And it pains me to say that, because I so want to give people a better answer than that. But that is the only way to get rid of it.
Hey listeners, we hope you've been enjoying this episode, and we appreciate your love of all things vegan fitness. For those of you who want even more support on your vegan fitness journey, check out our Muscles by Brussels community and become a member. By joining the team, you are one of our exclusive VIPs. As a member, you'll find over 200 macro-friendly, high-protein recipes that can meet any of your meal planning needs. You'll also receive training programs that update monthly. This training has progressive overload built into it, so you can be sure if you're following the program, you are making progress. All of this and more is located inside our Vegan Proteins members only app. As a Muscles by Brussels member, you'll unlock bonus courses, challenges, and more every month. You'll also be invited to our live Zoom video calls, which happen 2 times a month and are absolute gold to those who show up. And if you can't make the calls, don't worry, you have the opportunity to email us whenever you want. You'll receive a video response to all of your questions from one of the coaches here at Vegan Proteins every time you message us. Members also receive 40% off many of our other services. And of course, our private community of like-minded individuals is like no other. Best of all, you can try this membership out for a full month at no cost to you with this special offer for our listeners only, because we appreciate and want to fully support you. Use the link in our show notes to sign up for your free trial today. We hope to see you on our next live coaching call.
Moving on to our question and answer segment here. Here we go, Giacomo. Deadlift is my favorite exercise, but I'm also afraid of getting hurt. If my form is always good, am I still at risk of hurting myself with strain or fatigue, or do injuries just come from bad form?
Injuries do not just come from bad form. Certain exercises do actually put a strain on your body and test your limits. I think the best thing you can do is focus on having good form. For a deadlift specifically, it's to posterior chain posse, your upper posterior, your lower posterior, all of the muscles in your back, essentially, the back of your body from head to toe. The stronger those muscles are in isolation and throughout the compound movement by having good form, the safer you will be. like anything else, your spine ages, and the more wear and tear on your spine, the harder it becomes to do exercises that require you to place a lot of strain on your spine. And let's face it, deadlifts do just that. But there's no reason why you should stop doing them as long as you don't feel any sort of extreme pain, you know? And you couldn't pay me to stop deadlifting or squatting or benching, for example. It's just a matter of tempering expectations based on, I don't want to say your pain threshold, like the health of your spine, essentially. And again, yeah, your best thing that you could do is to focus on good form, for sure. However, also to strengthen up areas of your body that promote you having a spine that is moving safely and moving well, and by keeping yourself in good form in that moving pattern, like keeping your glutes well-trained, your hamstrings well-trained. You could throw a little low back training into there, your upper body. People don't think about it, but it's very easy for your upper back muscles to give out on a deadlift, right? And so, you know, training those muscles as well, your lats, your inner upper back muscles, like your rhomboids, for example, all that stuff. And then obviously to engage all the muscles in your back from head to toe when you lift. Not just lifting with good biomechanics as far as your movement pattern goes, actively engaging those muscles throughout the lift. On the way up and the way down, actually, the negative is pretty important. If you want to build up strength on your deadlift, it'll keep you moving well. You got anything you want to add to that, Danny?
No, not really. I mean, I think that even when you have absolutely perfect form, injury can happen to anybody at any time. That's basically my point. You're always at risk of having some kind of an injury. Having pristine form is a great way to protect yourself, but it is important to remember that an injury can happen at any time. That's all.
Cool. Danny, what is the least processed way to get protein in as a vegan?
All right, least processed way to get protein in as a vegan. So I'm going to give two different kinds of answers to this. First, I would say things like greens, nutritional yeast, beans, tofu, tempeh. Those are probably the least processed ways I can think of to get protein in as a vegan. My second part of that answer is why. Like, why is that super important? Clearly it can be done. I just mentioned several ways that it can be done. But oftentimes I find that I actually know who asked this question. It's a coach. It's somebody who coaches other people who is not vegan herself. So I appreciate the question because she wants to help clients that want to lean into more vegan eating, which is awesome. But a lot of times if somebody is not vegan and they're asking this question, these are people that take protein powders, right? Whey protein powders, casein protein powders, and those are super processed. Those are mega processed. When I look at something like chicken breast or ground beef or something, that is super processed. I mean, that's not the reason why I wouldn't eat those things. I have a million and one other reasons why I wouldn't eat those things, but I often find the people who ask that about vegan stuff specifically are also consuming some crazy processed stuff that they don't think of as processed. So that leads me to the question, what is processed? You know, if I chop up a banana, I just put it through a process of me chopping it. If I put it in a food processor, it is now processed. So some people would say tofu is a processed food. Some people would say tempeh is a processed food. Some people would say protein powder is a processed food. Some people would say it's not. Most people, what they're talking about when they ask this question, they're talking about mock meats. How can you avoid mock meats and get your protein in? That's the real question here. And that is why it is so important to me to help show you guys that you can make your own mock meats. Because when I first went vegan 20 years ago, seeing a Boca burger, I thought it was like made out of magic. You know, like I could read the ingredient list. I know what's in it, but I was like, how did they make this amalgamation of food that looks like a burger, but it's not a burger? Wow, magic. Must be a Frankenfood. And now that I've been vegan for so long and I've written so many recipes and made so many things, now I know that you can make those things with ingredients you have in your own kitchen. And I think that when you do that, it really takes the mystique out of it. When you see something like a Beyond Meat burger that is largely pea protein and coconut oil and salt and spices, right? Or Morningstar Farm chicken strips, which are soy and gluten and spices, right? A lot of these things are the same few ingredients and spices. And usually some oils and gums and other things to keep them stable, which if you don't want those things, make them yourself. And it's very easy. So I know that's kind of a roundabout answer, but again, to actually specifically answer it, least processed foods to get vegan protein, greens, all kinds of greens, broccoli, cruciferous vegetables, kale, spinach, tofu, tempeh, edamame, nutritional yeast, lupini beans, all different kinds of beans, lentils, that's the way. But, you know, I just also mentioned a lot of fiber. So if someone's not ready for that, that could tear them up a little bit. So you might need to work up to that.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. Please stay in touch with us at IamJustAthena, at Vegan Proteins, at Muscles by Brussels on socials. Head on over to veganproteins.com to hit the contact button. You'll always hear from one of us. Once again, my name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll talk to you soon. Mm-hmm.